Sorry, Lieutenant. Our searchlight brought your shadow up past its threshold. But you were dead right. Sorry, bad choice of words. But it's definitely a mine, and definitely an enemy weapon. We've got a hazardous equipment assessment team on the way. Just don't move.
A few moments later, the tremors began behind her knees. She struggled to control them. How sensitive was the sensor pod? Reason suggested that she'd been moving more before and it hadn't reacted, but reason had no control over her hindbrain, where panic danced its jig on her spine. She was very bored with being that scared by the time the voice spoke again.
You put down a good line, Lieutenant. Don't move. We're at the next pen. We can see you clearly.
Esme wanted to turn and see them, see something friendly, even if that was the last thing she saw. But she did not move.
We're afraid if we douse the spotlight, that'll trigger another search sequence, and we don't know how it's programmed.
Esme remembered that some mines were set to go after a specific number of searches had been triggered, even if they didn't find anything. She might have triggered an earlier search when she first flung herself away from the thing.
If we're lucky, it's looking for a match to something specific, which we don't resemble, but...
Esme wished the voice would shut up now. What if the mine reacted to minute vibrations carried through someone's suit? Even hers. Surely they had someone watching it. Surely they had a plan.
Wraith's given us an update on what's beyond the hull breach. They're evacuating personnel now. How's your suit air? Give me a one-letter answer. A for ample, S for short, C for critical. Then a number for minutes remaining.
Esme looked and was startled to see how far down the gauge had gone.
S. 16.
I'd call that critical myself. Look, here's what we'll do. Someone's going to come up behind you, trying to match your profile, and cast the same shadow, and pop on an external reserve. Don't move. He'll do all the hooking up from his end.
Yes, sir.
Esme's eyes had locked onto the air gauge. The number flicked down to 15, and it was definitely in the red zone.
Breathe slowly. You're not doing any work. You may have longer than that.
Fear burns oxygen. Esme remembered that, along with other pithy sayings. It was amazingly hard to breathe slowly because you needed to save oxygen. She tried thinking of other things.
The mind sensor pod feel the vibration of the person coming up behind me?
That kind of thought didn't help her take slow breaths. She tried to send her mind back to her valley, that favorite and reliable relaxation exercise. But then the gauge flicked to 14.
Don't gasp. Don't look at the gauge. It will either go down to zero, or it won't.
Esme did not feel the vibration. What she felt first was a tiny push that made her sway forward. She stiffened against it. Then something tapped the back of her helmet, and a new voice spoke in her ear.
Doing good, sweetheart. Just don't wiggle while I get this tank attached.
Random bumps and prods, which she tried to resist so that she wouldn't move enough to trigger the pod's notice. She eyed her oxygen gauge. 9. Had she really been standing there waiting more than 6 minutes? Apparently so. The gauge flicked down again to 8. Esme braced herself as her unseen rescuer tried to hook up the auxiliary tank with the least possible movement.
Gauge?
7.
Damn, it's supposed to... Oh.
Esme didn't know what that O meant, and it infuriated her as she tried not to watch the gauge. It seemed a long time, but it hadn't flickered down to 6 when the indicator whipped over to the green section.
Gauge?
Green.
Number?
147.
Good. Now, I'm gonna hook into your telemetry. You've been out longer than your suit's rated for.
Esme didn't care. She was breathing. She would not run out of oxygen.
Get your internal temp's low. Turn up your suit heater.
She complied, and warmth rose from her boot soles. The tremor she'd been fighting to control eased. Had it been only cold and not panic after all? She wanted to believe that, but the sour smell of her sweat denied it.
We have a problem, Sweeza.
Oh yeah? Join the club.
If that's the only mine, if it blows up, it will probably damage only those forward compartments. Oh, and you, of course. We haven't spotted any other mines, but we can't figure out why there's only one. If there's only one.
I sure hope they don't expect me to figure it out.
It's not like the Blood Horde to do that, but there's no doubt that the ships that attacked were Blood Horde ships. Came right in for the kill. Wraith got unequivocal scan data, and then broke off when Sting and Justice closed and started raking them.
Esme wondered about that. By rumor, if a Blood Horde group closed with prospect of a kill, it would not break off just to avoid contact with another ship. Unless its ships were having trouble. She wished she could see the scan data herself. Not likely if the mine blew, but she decided to dare a transmission.
Were they close enough to plant the mine by hand?
Don't transmit. If it hears you...
You wanted to know why. Is Wraith Scantech available?
Wait.
Esme could imagine the scene in Kosciusko's communications shack. Perhaps Major Patak was there. Certainly the captain was.
You can upset him, Lieutenant.
She wasn't sure what it meant. She shrugged enough to move the shoulders of the suit.
You got an idea, huh? Good for you. I can't figure out why that thing hasn't blown us both, but I'm willing to live with that.
Esme felt her own stiff face relaxing into a grin.
Sweeza, just in case you've got an idea, we've patched you through to the Wraith's senior scan tech. Just try to keep your transmissions short, do you understand?
Yes, sir. Did the Blood Horde ships come close enough for an EVA team to plant the mine, either by hand or by pod?
Yes, I suppose. We were trying to rotate because of the damage to the starboard shields and hull. They got pretty close.
Esme wanted to yell, "Numbers, dammit!"
Numbers, dammit!
Fortunately, the next transmission gave her the figures she wanted. Close enough indeed. Her mind raced through the equations for both EVA and pod movement.
How soon after did the Blood Horde ships pull away?
As soon as Sting and Justice came back.
How soon?
Esme waited, confident in that background bellow. Sure enough, the tech came back on with the precise interval. Esme felt as if someone had run a current down her spine. Maybe they'd spotted the fleet ships before they were fired on, or maybe they hadn't. They'd planted a smart mine, programmed for a specific task, and then they'd gone away, leaving Wraith damaged but not killed.
Why? What did the Blood Horde expect to happen next?
A damaged Familius military vessel would not be abandoned, so they couldn't have hoped to capture it. In fact, if they had, why mine it? Damaged Familius vessels went to dockyards or DSRs, like Kosciusko. What would the Blood Horde know about DSRs? Whatever was in the public domain, certainly. And Esme knew that the public knew DSRs were capable of taking the smaller fleet ships into the DSR's vast central repair bay.
The Blood Horde chose a small ship to disable, planted a smart mine, then withdrew so that Wraith would lead the way to a DSR. The mine's programmed to go off when Wraith enters a repair dock. It's not strong enough to destroy it, but it would probably be unable to make jump.
Certainly unable to make jump.
And it would be immobilized for attack. Either they followed Wraith and her escort to this system, or the mine will also have a homing module to lead them here. They want the DSR, almost certainly for capture, since they could have covered Wraith with enough mines to blow the whole DSR if they'd wanted.
It makes sense. Never thought the Blood Horde were that sneaky. And what do they want a DSR for? Unless they've got significant battle damage somewhere.
They don't have a military-grade shipyard or advanced technical skills. They want a DSR to upgrade their entire space effort. In one blow, they get manufacturing facilities, parts, and expert technicians. Given a DSR, they could upgrade any of their ships to fleet equivalency, or quickly learn to manufacture their own cruisers.
Of course.
Which means this thing won't go off until the parameters match whatever they think the inside of a repair bay looks like, or until someone tries to remove it. It doesn't know it's been detected until we try to do something about it.
Relief weakened Esme's knees. She leaned back against the unseen person behind her.
Which means we can walk away and it won't blow. As long as we don't put Wraith in the repair bay.
Not so fast. You still need to get a good scan on it.
Not active. But yes, I can do vid scan.
Without waiting for orders or permission, Sweeza moved, leaning over to aim at it. There it was. The blunt-ended cylindrical shape, the little sensor pod on its wire now retracted to form a knob on the cylinder. She could pick out a serial number, and one of the swirling shapes that meant something in the language of Athar's world. Probably something rude, The outside of Blood Horde ships were usually decorated with slogans intended to shock and frighten their neighbors. She patched the vidscan signal to her headset and waited.
That's enough. Now the guy behind you is going to withdraw.
A final tap on her shoulder, and then she saw the shadow cast by Kosciusko's light waver as he left. The smart mind sensor pod didn't move. Curious, but welcome. She waited a little longer, watching her oxygen display count the seconds and minutes, then lifted one stick-patched boot from the hull. The sensor pod stirred, rotating on its wire stalk.
The sensor pod's moving a bit. How about dousing the light while I get loose?
We were afraid the change might trigger something.
If it's programmed for repair bays, then light will activate the matching program, but dark will turn it off.
The light behind Esme vanished, and with it the crisp shadow she'd cast. She turned up the sensitivity of her helmet scan and just made out the mine. The sensor pod did not move. Slowly, she folded herself up as much as the EVA suit allowed so that she could grip her safety line close to the pin and kick the other boot free. No movement from the sensor pod. Slowly, she worked herself hand by hand backwards around the curve of the hull until she was out of sight of the mine. Then she stuck her boots onto the hull and walked back to the line connecting Wraith to Kosciusko. There, the specialists of the bomb squad waited for her, in the strange, bulky suits she had seen only in training cubes.
Suiza, come back to Kosciusko.
Yes, sir.
She wanted to know what the bomb squad was going to do about the mine. Now that she was here, she might as well stay. But the voice in her ear had left her no options, and she'd need another auxiliary tank to stay out longer.
Good job, Lieutenant. Glad you figured out it was safe for me to come back.
Me too.
Esme then hooked herself to the transfer line and pushed away. By the time she had clambered out of her EVA suit, she felt like collapsing in a heap on the deck. The undersuit clung to her nastily. She hated having to stand around in it while the chief in charge of suits examined and checked off the condition of the one she turned in. After one glance, she ignored the big mirror at the end of the bay. Her hair looked like dirty felt glued to her head. Showered and properly dressed once more, she headed to the compartment number waiting in her message bin. T1, Deck 9, number 30. That was in the administrative area of the senior technical schools, down the passage from Admiral Lavati's office. The conference, when she got there, consisted of Captain Haken, Admiral Dossignol, Admiral Lavati, Commander Ceviche, and Major Patak from Holland Architecture, and two lieutenant commanders she did not know. One wore the insignia of the 14th Heavy Maintenance, with the collar flashes of weapons systems. The other, also with weapons collar marks, wore the armband of ship's crew. The captain spoke first.
Well, Lieutenant, glad your guess about the mine's programming turned out to be right, at least as far as you were concerned.
Me too, sir.
Esme hoped the edge in the captain's voice had as much to do with the situation as with her.
I don't suppose you've had time to figure out how we're going to evacuate Wraith and repair her without triggering the mine's recognition program?
No, sir.
Haken was definitely displeased with her. That frosty glare could mean nothing else. Commander Ceviche glanced quickly at Admiral Dossignol.
What I'd like to know is how much time delay is built into that program. Would they have sent it open-ended, or would they have built in a hard delay for just this situation?
Eyes shifted to Esme. Shrugging was inadvisable in the midst of that much brass, so she just stayed quiet. Dossignol looked at Admiral Lavati.
Do we have any Blood Horde analysts aboard?
Not really, Sai. They pulled the best for some sort of policy strategic planning thing back at Rockhouse, and the next best is on the flagship with Admiral Garrosh. I got an instructor for the tactics course, but his specialty is benignity history. He's hitting the databanks.
Abandoning Wraith is not an option. The Admiral's made it clear that we are not to give the Blood Horde any chance at advanced technology, and even stripped. That hull has too many goodies to let it fall into the hands of the Blood Horde, or even a random pirate. If she can't be repaired well enough to get her back to safety...
She can be. This is exactly the kind of damage we're equipped to repair. The only question is how to do it safely, without risking the integrity of this ship.
Admiral Dossignol glanced at Commander Ceviche.
We have to repair that hull breach and reset the engines, or she won't make jump again. And that means working all around that mine, even if we don't stick her into the repair bay. I'd like to hear from the weapons experts.
The captain nodded at the crew weapons officer.
Given the kind of mine, there are several approaches we can use, depending on the amount of damage tolerable on Wraith.
Wraith's already got enough damage.
We realize you want to minimize any further damage, but there's a trade-off between safety and speed here. We can get the remnants of Wraith in to repair faster if some additional damage is acceptable. If not, we're looking at a long period of preparation in an already damaged ship. Dangerous time for both the workers and both ships to attempt something which may not be possible.
Explain what procedures you might use.
Ideally, we detach the mine and fold it in a foam mold casing and set it off at a safe distance. However, we, Lieutenant Commander Weitch and I, believe that there is considerable risk of detonating the mine if we try to detach it. So the next best thing is a foam bed, both interior, behind the hull where it's attached, and on the exterior. Here, the problem is how much of the interior needs to be foamed, and that homing signal we suspect, though that depends on what kind of signal it is.
How long before you can set it off?
That depends on what H&A tells us. Commander Ceviche, will we need to foam bed the interior as well? How much additional damage would such a mine cause?
With a gesture, Ceviche passed the question to Patak.
There's already so much damage forward. We're going to have to replace most of the structure anyway. On the other hand, it's stretching our resources, especially if we expect an attack. Do you think it's an aimed charge or just a straightforward blow 'em up?
If they went to the trouble of hand-placing this thing, I'd bet on a directed charge, probably with substantial penetrating power. It's definitely a hull cracker.
But if they wanted to disable the DSR, wouldn't the charge be directed outwards?
Not necessarily. An explosion of that magnitude in the repair bay could be expected to damage sensitive equipment, certainly enough to keep us from withdrawing Wraith and closing the bay. Sorry, but I think you'd better foam bed the interior, at least these compartments.
Patak called up a display and highlighted some of the forward compartments.
If we can possibly save these, 17A, 18A and B, and 23A, it'll save us considerable time on the repairs.
Then, with the precautions we need to protect personnel, we're talking 96 hours to foam bed those compartments and the exterior.
Why the exterior?
Because we don't want pieces flying around hitting us, or the rest of Wraith.
And I'll need additional squads. More people, the faster it'll go. As long as they're not working in close, it should be safe enough.
Very well, Commander. I presume damage control would have personnel trained to spray a foam bed?
Yes, sir.
Captain Haken turned to his exec.
Make sure he gets what he needs. Major Patak, can H&A do anything to expedite this?
Yes, sir. With the captain's permission, I have construction crews standing by to widen access to the compartments that must be foamed. They've been clearing debris already.
I thought we pulled everyone out.
We did, sir. But when tactical analysis concluded that the mine had its programming set for our internal bay, I sent them back over.
Very well. Keep me informed.
With that, the captain rose. Everyone stood as he left. Patak beckoned to Esme.
Lieutenant, you're not ready to direct a crew in this kind of situation. I want you to hold down the office, be my communications link. I'm going over myself.
Yes, sir.
Patak started down the passage. Esme followed.
You'll be in charge of expediting the transfer of materials and tools as we need them. I've set up a model in my office, but it'll need modification. They always do. Keep in mind the limited staging area on Wraith. We don't want things backing up there.
The Serrano Legacy, Once a Hero, is continued on the next CD.